Today we're looking at the Gospel of Mark. We look at kind of three big sections today, so we got to move a little bit as we go through them. But they are great stories for us. Okay, Jesus and his disciples find themselves far from where they began, kind of in and around the Sea of Galilee and around Capernaum, where a lot of Jewish people, his word was, ministry started there, kind of had its home base there. We talked about this last week, but now they've journeyed about 40 miles, and they're 40 hard miles away through the mountainous range to a region that's largely made up of Gentiles. Gentiles, of course, are anybody that's simply not Jewish. But this was the big thing for some of the early followers who knew that God had worked through his people, the Jewish people. But it was stretching for them to think that his grace was going to expand beyond the borders that they knew. So last week, we saw that Jesus had great compassion on the woman who had the demon-possessed daughter. She was a Syrophoenician, which is a title from where she was from and the people she belonged to. It's like, oh, okay, not a great one for them. Then they find out she's Canaanite. And like, can God be generous to people from Cana? All their fake gods and false idols? Can he even do that? And he can, and he did. And today we see his compassion continue on. We're in chapter 7, verse 31. Then Jesus returned from the region of Tyre and went through Sidon. So these are places that are not typically on the up and up. The Old Testament compares them to Sodom and Gomorrah, not a place where a Bible study is likely to break out. So they went to the region of the Decapolis. That's 10 small towns or villages spread out along this countryside. And they brought to him a man who was deaf and had a speech impediment. And they begged him to lay his hand on him. And taking him aside from the crowd privately, he put his fingers in his ear, and after spitting, touched his tongue. And after looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him, Ephphatha, that is, be opened. And his ears were opened and his tongue released, and he spoke plainly. And Jesus charged them to tell no one. But the more he charged them, the more zealously they proclaimed it. And they were astonished beyond measure, saying, he has done all things well, even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak. What a wild account that Jesus would find this deaf man. And then we see what you might think of as unusual methods. He can't hear. And so Jesus is like, let me just give you a little wet willy here. I don't know about you, but I think there's some germaphobes among us that's like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're just going to lick my finger and stick it in your ear. There's people here that I think would be like, I'm good. I don't need to hear. It's okay. No, seriously, I'm just gonna spit a little and I'm going to touch your tongue. You're like, no, I'm quite all right. It's okay. We're going to see in a minute here how his varied methods were a blessing. So here he's got a guy that's in a region that isn't known to worship the Jewish God. And here is Jesus coming, and he finds him full of suffering and full of hopelessness. And yet so easily, he opens his ears and he releases his tongue and the man begins to speak. Now, as much as Jesus tries to convince this man to keep this miracle on the down low, he suddenly can hear, but he hears nothing of what Jesus says. That Jesus said, now listen, don't go and tell everybody. Now, why would he do that? Because Jesus already draws a crowd. Everywhere he goes, he can't make it from here to there without having to weave his way or push his way among a crowd. His ministry, his purpose, was never to attract one large crowd. His purpose was to speak the truth, teach, do miracles to verify and show who he is, but eventually to go to the cross for the sins of the world. What's interesting, the more that Jesus told him not to share, the guy just couldn't stop. And it says that he was astonished beyond measure. But you know what's interesting? When we walk with Jesus long enough, sometimes that initial eagerness and excitement around the gospel begins to wane. And now it becomes almost the opposite. Instead of Jesus trying to suppress our evangelism, we gotta work at it. We gotta have effort into it because we don't want to. But I think what we see here is that there is an eagerness when someone encounters Jesus in a powerful way. In fact, some of the most powerful and effective evangelists are the people that have recently came to faith. A lot of times they don't even know what they're supposed to say. They don't even know what they're not supposed to say. They don't know the lingo, the language. They don't know the five steps, the three steps. They don't know the Roman road or any road. And yet, they can't help but share the good news of Jesus with all the people around them because they've had a powerful encounter with the living God. So I think we keep our outward looking demeanor and heart towards the world around us when we continue to have powerful encounters with God. When we open up His Word and we read it and we study it and we go slow and we meditate on it and we read fast and we get the big picture of it, we do it all. When we reflect on His goodness in our life, I think that increases the way that we want to tell people and share the good news with Him. And think about this odd method that He uses. It's all the fingers in the ears and the tongue and all this. The only thing I'm reminded of is this, that Jesus used a whole mess of different methods to heal people. He did that, I think, for a couple different ways. He didn't want us to reduce what He did down to a formula. Like we do this, and then you do this, and then abracadabra, kabam. And so the miracles, we would think, would be all about this formula. We say this thing, we do this prayer, we hold this hand up, we hold that hand up. Jesus healed in lots of different ways. And that demonstrated that the power came not from the method, but from the messenger. That the power didn't come from how He did it, but who did it. Jesus healed at times by speaking a word. Get up, be clean. To the paralytic in Mark 2, He simply speaks the word. To Lazarus in John chapter 11, He says, come forth. And Lazarus in all of his stinky death garments waddles out of the tomb. Jesus healed by touching people. Mark 1, He touches a leper, makes him whole again. Mark 5, He takes Jairus' daughter by the hand and He picks her up and says, come, daughter. Other times He healed when people touched Him. You remember the story of the woman with the condition of blood, and she knows that if she just touches Jesus, that she'll be made well. And so she presses against all the people, gather away, gather away, gather away, and all the crowd and all the people, and she weaves her way, gather away, gather away, through this crowd, and she touches the edge of His garment, and she's made well again, and her life is never the same. Jesus healed up close when He took somebody's hand, but He also healed at a distance. Last week we learned about how He healed the Syrophoenician woman's daughter, but He never even made the trip. He never even went there. He simply said, your daughter is well, and she was. Jesus used mud, physical elements. He spit on the ground and made saliva and wiped it on the blind man's eyes. He heals here. All these different methods, so that we couldn't focus in on the methods, but instead we would see that all the power comes through Jesus. He could heal with His word, with His touch. He could heal here. He could heal. He could heal there. It begins to sound like a Dr. Seuss book. He could heal here or over there. Because the power all came through Jesus. So we come into this next section, in which Jesus feeds 4,000 people. If you've been paying attention, you're like, wait a hot minute. Didn't he just feed 5,000? And didn't you just belabor the point about how Jesus does things differently? And yet here we have him repeating a miracle. We're going to see the goodness in this. And I think he does this for a couple reasons. First, we're going to see how his compassion extends to people and places that the rest of his people would have thought never existed. So now the Jewish people can't say, well, see, we have Jesus because we got to see his miracles. You guys never did. Well, no. The Syrophoenician woman says, no, I saw my daughter get well. The deaf man says, no, I can hear. I can speak. Here we find some 4,000 people. And in those days, when a great crowd had gathered, they had nothing to eat. He called his disciples and said to them, I have compassion on the crowd. Key phrase here, I have compassion. This is the words of Jesus. So nobody's laying on an emotion onto Jesus and hoping that it's the right one. Jesus says, I have compassion. He's expressing that his act of miracle is flowing from his compassion. We're not guessing his emotion. We're not like trying to read his face. He has compassion because he says that he did. He says, they've been with me for 3 days and have nothing to eat. If I send them away hungry to their homes, they will faint on the way. And some of them have come from far away. So he's still in the region of the Decapolis, the 10 villages, but the 10 villages are both small and they're really spread out. So logistically, this crowd has followed Jesus. Everywhere they went, he just went. What better thing would you have wanted to go to? So the crowd just follows them. Well, now they're in an empty countryside, and Jesus has compassion and recognizes that you send them home. It's a long way to go without any food. I'm not sure he says they can even make it there. And his disciples, verse 4, answered him, how can one feed these people with bread here in the desolate place? And he asked them, how many loaves do you have? And they said, 7. He directed the crowd to sit down on the ground, and he took the 7 loaves, and having given thanks, he broke them, and he gave them to his disciples to set before the people. And they set them before the crowd, and they had a few small fish. And having blessed them, he said that these should also be set before them. And they ate, and they were satisfied. And they took up the broken pieces left over, 7 baskets full. And they were about 4,000 people. And he sent them away. So there's striking similarities between the feeding of the 5,000 and the feeding of the 4,000. And the feeding of the 5,000, if you remember, there's 5 loaves and 2 fish. Here, there's 7 loaves, a few fish, probably small ones. At the end of the first miracle, there's 12 baskets left over of bread. It says that they ate until they were full. Literally, the word's gorged, like full. The first miracle left them with 12 baskets, lunch baskets with food. Here, these bread and fish have left them all full again, now with 7 baskets full. But the word for basket here isn't small lunch basket, it is large basket. It's the same word that's used to describe the basket that they lowered Paul down from the wall in Acts chapter 9. So this was a man-sized basket, and there's 7 of them full. Once again, to prove that Jesus wasn't just good at like breaking off just the right amount of bread and fish so that the last piece filled the last empty belly. What this shows is that he has the ability and the power and the means to create, to make. So by the time they're done, it's not just that they have fed 4,000, they've got baskets full of bread. Can you picture how incredible that would be? Hungry people, and they're now not hungry, and there's baskets full of bread. So I think Jesus does a similar miracle here, one, because there's a need, right? Also to show that his mercy and his grace and his compassion, his words, extend far beyond what we want to believe. His compassion extends to people that we don't expect his compassion to extend to. And he also demonstrated it again to show us that his power is not a party trick that's going to be discovered, not some sleight of hand that's going to be revealed if you do the trick again. I've talked about him before, but my good buddy Nick Pierce is in ministry as well. And along the way, he got a knack for doing card tricks, for magic. High level stuff, professional level stuff. And so we did our church camps together. The kids would love to come over and have him do a trick. And so he had a standard 2 or 3, 4 tricks that he could do really easily. And so I had seen him do these tricks often. And he said to me one day, he goes, "I'm sure as many times as you've seen me do these tricks, you know how I do them now." I think you've overestimated me. But you know this, that a magician doesn't like to do the same trick over and over. Why? Because you're at risk of revealing how it is that you do what you do. Jesus repeats this miracle because there's no trick. There's no sleight of hand. There's no magic. He's got people in need, and he's got compassion and the power to satisfy that need. So the people leave hungry. He gets in the boat, and he leaves as well. He makes it back to around Capernaum. Now, I would think, personally, the next section would say something like this. Word got back to the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the scribes that Jesus had continued his miracles. I would think that the word would get back and people would say, and the people saw and believed. They heard his power. They heard his stories. They heard all the things that he had done. He had fed 4,000. He had healed people. And the next section would say, and so everybody that heard believed. Well, that's not what we get. In fact, verse 11 says this. The Pharisees came and began to argue with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven to test him. He sighed deeply in his spirit and said, "Why does this generation seek a sign? Truly, I say to you, no sign will be given to this generation." And he left them, got into the boat again, and went to the other side. So when he says, "I'll give you no sign," it's literally, "I will give you no sign again. I've already given you signs. How many more miracles do you need? How much more evidence do you need to see?" Because it's easy when our heart is hard to think, if I just saw one more miracle, then I would believe. If I just heard one more thing, then I would believe. I'm convinced that apologists that help us understand and defend the faith are a gift to us. But they help give us confidence. They don't give us faith. If our heart is hard, there's no number of miracles that will make that heart soft. Think about where Jesus is at in his ministry, all the signs, all the wonders, and what's their conclusion? If I could just see one more sign, then I would believe. Listen, if you don't want to believe, there will never be enough miracles to make you believe. You could tell yourself, "Well, if I saw something, then I saw a sign, then I would believe." Listen, this book is full of them. From the first page to the last page, it's a miracle of God's care and compassion for us. It's full of this covenant-keeping, promise-keeping miracles. You need a miracle read. We live in a world that's full of miracles. Our mere existence, like we breathe just the right amount of oxygen, every breath to sustain life. What a miracle. We live on a planet that rotates on its axis at just the right angle to sustain life. It's not happenstance, that's a miracle. That creation works in harmony all the way down to the smallest molecule. It's a miracle. There's miracles all around us. You hold a baby and you see new life and the preciousness of that. That's not an annoyance. It's a miracle. If our heart is soft, we see those and we rejoice. But when our heart is hard, we miss it. So friends, pray for a soft heart. So we don't, this is number one, stand on the wrong side of faith and think, if I only saw another miracle. Pray for a soft heart so that we can have faith and receive faith. Listen, we often have doubts and things that we work through. Work through them. Look at the truth. Dig deep. But sometimes our pride masquerades as doubt, so we can hide behind that and not step into faith. Pray for a soft heart. Maybe we don't stand on the wrong side of faith and think, if I only saw another miracle. Pray for a soft heart. So number two, we don't try to minimize the reach of God. God's hand, his miracles, and his compassion were extended to a region and a group of people that many of the people around Jesus would have thought never would have happened. When our heart is hard, we have a self-focused, self-centered existence. Everything is about us and me and we. But when we are following Christ, when he has softened our hearts, when our faith in him is real, it expands our eyes to the world around us. Then suddenly, we don't just want to know Jesus, we want everyone in the world to know Jesus, because we see the life-changing, life-giving, eternity-changing good news of the gospel. So we want to send people around the world, support them in embarrassing amounts, love them from afar and love them when they come near. We don't want to try and minimize the reach of God. When our hearts are hard, suddenly we help God by putting up little boundaries where God's compassion can't reach. You know those people. They're different than us. They live differently and they vote differently and they maybe even cheer for the wrong sports team. And when our heart's not in a good place, we help God by setting up little fences and say, no, there's no need to tell them because the gospel can't possibly go there. And how wrong we would be. Pray for our soft hearts. We don't try to minimize the reach of God. We try to expand it to come alongside and be a part of his story. I got to go fast. Number three, pray for a soft heart so we have eyes to see God's goodness all around us. Wouldn't it be a bummer if you're living in these days and you hear of a deaf man who can hear and a mute man who can speak, a woman whose daughter's made well, 4,000 people are fed and sent on their way. Wouldn't it be a shame if we lived among those miracles and we missed God's goodness? That would be a shame. In church, it would be a shame for us as well if we didn't slow down to see God's goodness all around us. Church, we've got a lot of hardships going on. We've got people walking through difficult seasons. And even in the middle of those, we get to see God's goodness all around us. Pray for a soft heart so that we can see God's goodness. That we see Jesus as our only Savior and our sustainer. We pray for us. God, give us a soft heart. A heart that's been changed from the inside out. that your gospel has given us a new heart, full of love, joy, peace, and patience, and kindness, and goodness, and gentleness, and self-control. Give us a heart that loves you beyond all measure, that we might have your compassion on the world around us. Bless us as we go from this day, and we seek to honor you as we do it. In your name I pray. Amen.